Let us begin our service this morning with the lighting of our five candles of fellowship. We light these candles to remind ourselves and our children of our work to create a world that is fair and caring. We strive to make the spaces we inhabit peace sites dedicated to promoting peace. We affirm the sacredness of sexuality and gender diversity. We honor all sexual orientations and gender identities, as well as people who have none, and deeply value each other's authenticity. We continue on our journey toward undoing prejudice, racism, and oppression, our journey as individuals, as a community, as participants in the wider world. We understand disability as a culture, lived history, and embodied experience, and a product of de-ableing oppressions in society. We work to enable full access and interdependence in our faith community. We are given this one earth and seek to honor this truth by caring for our buildings, our grounds, and all places on this earth in ways that respect the interconnected web of all existence, of which we are but a part. In this spirit, we gather, looking toward the day when all people are inside the candle's warmth and light.
Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church at Washington Crossing. I'm Reverend Kim Wildchesky, and it is my privilege to serve this congregation as its minister. I'm so glad to welcome each of you into this time. If this is your first morning with us, a very special welcome to you. No matter how we gather, we know that it is a brave thing to explore a community for the first time. I hope you will recognize in this hour together that we are a congregation striving to create community, celebrate life, and change the world. Now, visitor, friend, member alike, what is new for each of us this morning is that I'm not leading worship this hour from my basement office or barefoot, but instead from our beloved sanctuary, this place that many of you have not been in since March of 2020. And because of my sabbatical, I have not been in this pulpit since Christmas Eve of 2019. It is no small thing that I am able to be here this morning. Over the last few months, our tech team, members of this congregation, have taken it upon themselves to research, install, test, and run what is basically a TV studio station in the back of our sanctuary. Which is not to say that we've got it all figured out. Hardly. There will be some camera angles today that may make you wish you had taken your Dramamine this morning. We are working on it. But we are growing in our ability to connect to this place, to your sanctuary, and hopefully that means also to one another too. So welcome, everyone. I will miss looking at your faces this morning in those little boxes that I have grown accustomed to, but I'm excited for all that I can imagine as I look out into the sanctuary this morning for what this time will allow and all that is to come. Now, I just want to say one more thing maybe about me being in the sanctuary this morning. You will see that I'm not alone here. Yes, we've got our tech folks, but Steve and our other musicians, they've been doing this for over a year. It was emotional to come in this morning, and I want to lift up Steve and Carol and other folks who have really shown up and allowed us to be in this space, at least visually, over the last 16 months. But you'll also see today that our worship associates and some of our musicians are not providing worship from the sanctuary with others of us. And that's going to continue probably forever. I'm committed to each of us, not just worship leaders, but all of us participating in ways that make us feel safe, but that are also more accessible than ever before. Many of our worship associates right now are parents to young children and couldn't have said yes to leading in this capacity because of the time commitment, the time away from their children while they're also, you know, running around the sanctuary. And because of this pandemic time, they've been able to lead in this way. And we see that in numerous leadership positions. So again, today you'll see me from the pulpit, but you're going to see Lauren, our worship associate from home, and Kelsey and Michael from their home. And I just want to lift this up that this is something to celebrate, that we get to be in all these many spaces, but still be in community together leading. So visitors, I'm sure that you've already learned a bit about us just from these 5 or 10 minutes together. But if after this morning service, you would like to know more, please fill out a digital visitor's card. There's going to be a link provided in the chat. If you would like to know more about us or so that we can get to know you a bit more, that will be provided and we ask that you fill that out. Additionally, if anyone is in need of closed captioning, you can turn it on by clicking the bottom of your screen with the square with the letters inside that say CC. Click there and then on the option show subtitle. And if that is appearing for you right now and you wish not to see the closed captioning, go to that same square and click hide subtitle. So today, especially, I want to give a huge shout out and thanks, like always, but again, maybe a bigger shout out to our tech hosts, Michelle Zechner, John Harvey, MJ Hansen, and our AV tech staffer, Arielle Schwartz, who are all behind the scenes in different locations as well and making our time today possible. I want to lift up MJ again, as well as Lori O'Neill, who create the videos and slides that you see each week, Steve Ryan, Kelsey Swanson, and Michael Wass for the music, and Lauren Schalish, this week's worship associate. This month's theme, we are talking about balance. And today's service is a perfect entry into this conversation as we begin to become a more simultaneously gathered and online congregation. As you get used to this, as we get used to this, right now, I just want you to settle into this conversation. So I invite you to turn your attention away from your expectations, your assumptions, your hopes, and turn instead to your body, your breathing, the pace of your heart, the comfort or discomfort of how you are standing or sitting. Could you be even 1% more comfortable? If you can, give yourself that allowance. Give yourself that yes to become so. Now, as you breathe once more, I invite you to hear and to receive that today would not be the same if you hadn't chosen to be here. Consider this truth. Breathe into this truth. As we sing together, 'tis a gift to be simple. The words will be
simple, 'tis a gift to be free, 'tis a gift to come down where we ought to be. And when we find ourselves in the place just right, 'twill be in the valley of love and delight. When true simplicity is gained, to bow and to bow bend, we shan't be ashamed. To turn will be our delight, till by turning we come round right.
Today's opening words come from a children's book about a baby bird looking for his mother. "Are you my mother?" he asked a cat, a dump truck, a car. "Are you my mother?" he asked a cow. "How can I be your mother?" said the cow. "I am a cow." "Are you my mother?" he asked a dog. "I'm not your mother. I am a dog," said the dog. But in our story about UUCWC and the one we tell our children, everyone answers yes. This community helped us reimagine this familiar story so it fits the world we want to live in. So too does a hybrid service give us this sense of possibility and the assurance we can keep our communities safe and sustained. This is why you will see worship associates and other members participating remotely. Instead of a return, we're choosing to answer yes to our relationships and to our reimagining. "It is such an ancient habit," says poet Haiyan Shirara, "making ourselves new." Each week, we light our chalice, a symbol of our faith, a beacon of hope, love, and justice. We join in this lighting in solidarity and community with hundreds of other Unitarian Universalists lighting chalices today in homes and in virtual worship services, reminding us that we're connected to one another and to a larger community of faith and love. Please join me in lighting our chalice. Our chalice lighting words. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another.
When I breathe in, I'll breathe in love. When I breathe out, I'll breathe out peace. When I breathe in, I'll breathe in peace. When I breathe out, I'll breathe out love. When I breathe in, I'll breathe in peace. When I breathe out, I'll breathe out love.
Good morning, everybody. It's great to be with you. Thank you for that story, Lauren. I think I was remembering the bird thinks a big truck is its mother and he calls it a snort. I used to think that was so funny. So anyways, we often talk about a covenant at UUCWC, and usually we talk about how we want to be with each other when we're together. But you know, we can have a covenant with ourselves too. We know what we need to take care of ourselves. It's good to have a covenant with ourselves because it reminds us of that. One thing I've learned and added to my covenant is to tell the truth. What? Don't I tell the truth already? Sometimes telling the truth is hard, and I'm still learning to do this. What I know is it usually works out better in the long run when the truth is told at the beginning. So, for example, what happens when your friend hurts your feelings? The old me used to never say anything to that friend, and I would just move on and try just to do what's next. I didn't want to hurt their feelings, and I wanted to not pay attention to mine. But you know what? Not saying anything, I let my hurt grow. I let the warm feelings I had for my friend be not quite as warm. Our friendship became weaker, and I didn't want that to happen either. So when I thought about it, what if they didn't even know they hurt me? Well, we need to talk about that. What if they meant to hurt me? Ouch! We need to talk about that too. Maybe they're having a hard day. Or maybe they're not a real friend. Either way, I need to know. You know who I learned this from? And it's always good to have a friend who's a truth teller. Reverend Kim. One thing she says is, I'm going to name what's happening here. Anytime she says, I'm going to name, get ready for the truth. She might say in a meeting with lots of people, I'm going to name the quiet people in the room haven't spoken yet. Or, I'm going to name, we haven't even started talking about what we need to talk about. Why do you think that's true? Here is something I found about myself. When I speak the truth, even when it's hard, something happens in my body. My body, my heart, my spirit, they all align. It feels right and good. I am my whole self. So this week, I'm inviting you to notice how your body feels when you tell or hear the truth, even when it's hard. Notice that feeling of wholeness. Pause and take a deep breath and let it in. And that's our story for today. Thank you.
I'm reflecting a bit on Robin's words. Some I was expecting, some I were expecting, and others were truth-telling to me. I'm going to watch my finger wagging, Robin, if that's something that I do. I want to take this opportunity to let folks know is that as we move into the meditation and prayer, our chat is once again not functioning properly. So this is a meditation. It's a time of prayer, of open-hearted contemplation. But unfortunately for this morning, it will not be a time of communal sharing. So if there are things that you are hoping would have come to light during this time, please just email me following today's service so that we on staff know. And so in this spirit, again, will you please join me in the collective work of slowing things down, of deciding for these next few moments that you will acknowledge your distractions just long enough to call yourself more fully to this moment. And that in doing so, you're being more fully here in this moment with more than 100 others, breathing and asking your body to settle and maybe even closing your eyes if that feels comfortable. We are creating together a space and a time and a people of peace. A space and a time and a people of grounding, of balance. No matter where you are or who you are with, right now we can decide together in the sanctuary of this effort. Years ago, anthropologist Margaret Mead was asked by a student what she considered to be the first sign of civilization in a culture. The student expected Mead to talk about fish hooks or clay pots or grinding stones. But no, Mead said that the first sign of civilization in an ancient culture was a femur, a thigh bone, that had been broken and then healed. She explained that in the animal kingdom, if you break your leg, you die. You can't run from danger. You can't get to the river for a drink or hunt for food. You are meat for prowling beasts. No animal survives a broken leg long enough for the bone to heal. A broken femur that has healed is evidence that someone has taken time to stay with the one who fell, has bound up the wound, has carried the person to safety, and has tended to that person all the way through recovery. Helping someone else through difficulty is where civilization starts, Mead said. Can you think of a time, will you join me in thinking of a time when you could have been left to your own devices, broken, injured in some way, but instead you were tended to, you were nurtured, given the assurance that you wouldn't be left alone. Spirit of life, let us breathe into this moment in which injury and fear were accompanied by companionship and healing. Let us give our bodies the allowance, the encouragement to remember how vulnerability did not ruin us, but how isolation could have. This week, among all the joys and sorrows that exist within this congregation, let us lift up one of the great wisdom teachers of our time, Simone Biles, who reminded us this week about the work of healing the self, but also the call to heal our wounded and wounding ways of individualism, of isolation. For the reminder that self-care, self-protection, self-prioritization is an allowable and required part of being human, let us pause and feel how these truths say yes, or how the anxiety may rise, and hear again that self-care, self-protection, self-prioritization is an allowable and required part of being human. Let us give thanks to this wisdom teacher. And for the reminder that collective power is always more important than individual power, let us give thanks. For the lesson that incredible outcomes can still happen even when we, our very own special, unique selves, are not part of making that come to be, let us take pause, take stock, and give thanks. And once more, for the vulnerability, for needing help, for taking help, and then taking shots for saying yes to that help, and still showing us all that being left alone, that leaving others alone, that is the greatest risk. That is the greatest failure. Spirit of life, let us breathe into a memory of our own in which injury and fear were accompanied by a companionship and healing. Let us give our bodies the allowance, the encouragement to remember how vulnerability did not ruin us, but how isolation could have. Though the chat is not available, I invite you to take this time to either think on or even write down the names of someone who you would like to give thanks for, a teacher like Simone Biles, perhaps, or maybe a person or people who did not leave you alone when they could have. How might you say thanks? Even if they are not accessible for whatever reason, past or estranged, you can still lift up gratitude. We take this time once again to breathe into all that has arisen during this time of slowing down and of settling, of remembering and reconnecting. Let us allow more of that rumination and meditation to occur as we sing together, Spirit of Life. Steve will lead us in this song.
read a passage to you from a text called Trauma Stewardship. This particular part is a profile on a doctoral student named Anna Bradford, whose first trauma in life was her friend Hillary's death when they were both teenagers. This is just the start of her story that I share today. The way the Planks, that's Hillary's family, decided how they wanted the funeral to be was incredibly significant in how we were able to integrate what had happened. They decided they wanted to bury their daughter on our farm, which they did in part because they wanted the process to be one that the community could be engaged in, so that everyone who had been a part of her life could be a part of grieving her death. She was brought home from the hospital, and while there was nothing different from how they did burials back in the day, it was very organic feeling. We were able to be very present with her and had an ability to hang out with her and touch her and see her, not if we didn't choose to, but for those of us who wanted to, we did. And the way we handled the whole burial and processing was nicely paced, drawn out over the course of a day or so. She continues, people decided together how to make the box for her, and they found the place to dig the hole. It actually takes a long time to dig a hole that big when you're doing it with a shovel. We decided together which of the things we'd made for her would go in the coffin. We were all working together. The whole funeral was very organic. You show up and then we figure out what to do. Nothing was preordained. We take the time we needed to find some nails, and then we had to figure out how to carry this big box over to the hole we'd dug. After we had buried her, we knew that we now would have some time to hang out and talk about her and be together and have some food together. It felt very genuine, instead of something we felt like we should be doing. In preparation for this upcoming congregational year, this morning we begin a 5-week sermon series on the physical and mental effects of this past year and a half of collective trauma. A sermon series on how we might be present to the losses that we have known, and how we will discover the work that is needed in order to truly honor what has occurred, but also in doing so, create a life that maybe looks different than the one that was. These are, I hope, a series of conversations that help us integrate what has happened in organic ways, paced ways, ways in which we all find our place and our comfort and our bearings as we begin another time of uncertainty and change, a time that we hope will feel worthy of our energy and not something that we should be doing. Now, I know that right from the gate that many of you are taking a deep inhale, hearing that yes, for 5 Sundays, I'm going to talk about all the things that many of us are just so done talking about. We don't want to hear or think or reflect even one more time on the losses, the isolation, the way we have all changed. We've lived it. We've listened to the analysts speak about it, the politicians deny it, the musicians sing about it. We don't need to hear it mirrored back yet again in our sanctuary. Thank you very much. So let me just say, I get that. And I'm not so sure that I would sign up for this series myself. The problem, of course, is we can't just go into this new congregational season and start preaching on, say, creativity or story or balance, for example, and pretend like things are normal, pretend like it's some other time. We need to take this deep dive in order to feel a sense of truth about the world as it is right now, as we are within it right now, so that we can become oriented in our very own lives. I was talking with some friends this past week, and one younger woman just had a full neurological test because her muscles are responding in all of these disordered ways. And another's hip and back are in severe pain. Someone else's GI tract is screaming for the first time in their life. None of these friends started off complaining about their bodies when relaying these ailments. They said instead, "I'm so stressed. I feel so overwhelmed. Have you looked at the news today? I just don't know if we're making the right decisions." We name truths, as Robin said, in an effort to create a more whole and holy experience of our lives, a way to release what our bodies are so often trying to speak in so many other ways, and an effort to align our spirit with our lived experiences. And so we've got to name some things. Today and in the days going forward, we've got to start with some truths, speak some agreements, and try out some language that we might not want for our own lives, like trauma. And once we do all of that, only then can we consider what impact what has happened to you and to me and to all of us, to the world, to our world, maybe this congregational world, only then can we consider what impact it has on what will happen. So let me stop explaining myself and call us back to that story of Anna Bradford. What I'm wondering is, when you heard me read this piece by Anna about burying her friend Hillary, if you could go back and inquire within, how did you feel when listening to that story? What would you say you thought or felt when you heard that they had to pause to find some nails to build the coffin, or that they were building the box with Hillary's body in wait, or that they chose to include the community in the maybe the untouchable parts of such a transition, or anything else from that story? What did you feel? What did you think? I ask because this story of caretaking in the midst of grief, of preparing for a new life that is so different than the one we loved, of relying on and leaning into others in such deep vulnerability and exhaustion, this is our story right now. This is what's going on for us. And so checking in with yourself about what came up for you in hearing Anna's story might also be an invitation for you to consider what the work of this next phase of life, of healing, of communal living will feel like for you. There's no right or wrong response, of course. It's all just information. It's what's going on for you and your trauma response, or maybe it's trauma residue. In response to the world as it is and as it isn't, what did you feel? What did you think? And maybe better yet, in the story, who were you? While in seminary, I learned the very common practice used by progressive Christians and Jews called exegesis. To exegete something simply means to engage in a kind of critical, thoughtful, even playful interpretation of a text. The way I learned how to exegete a biblical text, for example, was to read the text from the perspective first of the narrator, as if I was the narrator. So why am I telling this story? What are my assumptions, my aims? Who's my audience? What feeling is behind these words? But then you read it again, and you take on the perspective maybe from the character in the text who we are speaking about. What would they say if they were telling the story? What are they feeling? What's not being said on their behalf? You can exegete a text from the enemy, the land, the people who are just off camera, who are actually never mentioned, but you know that they are there. They must be. And so you can imagine them into the story. So if you were to exegete that story of Anna, this teenager who has never experienced loss or change or finality like this before, telling the story of burying her friend, of coming together to work with others, her community, on something they've never worked on or for before, telling the story of the farm, the family. Who are you? Last week, after I shared our plans for reopening the building for small groups and eventually for worship, a few of us spent countless hours considering the reopening team's work and then drafting policies and procedures around their findings. During some of those meetings, I found myself driven with excitement and joy for the next season. And in others, I couldn't hold back my tears. Fear took hold, what ifs drowned out the dreaming, and each day ended with emails of new data, new guidelines, and the same question, will we even be able to open come September? When I came to the story of Anna and of Hillary after one of those meetings, I couldn't move my heart from Hillary. I wanted to. I had before in other readings securely planted myself as Anna, but Hillary rested in my heart all day long in my own life. I had been finding and using metaphorical nails and digging holes with a singular shovel, and I was just done. I didn't want to be dead, but I also didn't want to do the work of grieving someone else, some other losses, and then figuring out what to do with my life after anymore. I wanted my life, my body, the spirit of my memory to be cared for and nurtured and remembered. So again, there's no right or wrong response. It's all just information. It's what's going on. For you, in your particular moment on this particular day, and with your particular trauma response, in response to the world as it is and as it isn't. So what did you feel? And what did you think? And better yet, in this story, who are you? I used to think trauma was loud and explosive and physical, but it's actually just a shock to the system, which means we can have trauma of all sorts, mental, emotional, physical, or spiritual shocks. It all falls under that same scary word that, for me at least, previously was reserved for people who've endured horrendous tragedy or abuse. But it is what has happened to all of us. In a very concrete and communal way. Our brains are fuzzy. It takes a lot of energy to do the things that we love. We can't remember what day it is or the names of our loved ones and friends. That's trauma. And there are ways it's taking shape in each of our bodies and brains in unique ways too. And now all of a sudden, here we are in August of 2021, and most of us, not all of us, but most of us are just far enough out of the acute experience of all that things are actually starting to feel a little different, maybe even normal enough again. But you know what? You know why I'm making us talk about this for 5 weeks now, when you're starting to feel that spaciousness? The brain all this time has been navigating a chemical divide that's actual purpose is to separate out our ability to think of words and actually form them. Its purpose is to stop us from forming those words, but also the story, from naming the truth of things. And so as you do begin to form them, the words, the storyline, that means your brain is protecting you less. And believes that you can handle more of the truth. And friends, that's exhausting. That may be, for some of us, despairing, depressing. It might be aggravating, infuriating. But that's trauma. And before we experience the headlong tumble into a new congregational year of learning and experimenting, we have to be able to say that. We have to start with that agreement, with some collective understanding of what's happened to you and to me and to all of us, and then show up and then figure out what will happen next, how we will go forward together so that the spirit aligns with the body collective. Now, if you don't have the language for all that, can't find the words in the recesses of your brain yet, don't know how to recognize some of these feelings that I'm telling you, they must live in there, that's fine. I wonder then if instead you might consider thinking about Anna and Hillary and the people off camera, the ones who are still grieving, the ones maybe who are still in shock. Check in every so often with yourself in that story and see how it changes, how you change, how you associate or relate to someone else. It's a different kind of temperature check than we've been doing for these last 16 months, but a good way to inquire compassionately within. Friends, it was good to imagine some of you here with me today, and to imagine others of you signing on still from home. We are on our way into something new together, and we'll figure it out. It'll be organic, paced. Sometimes it's going to feel drawn out. And we don't have to do it. But with you, I want to. Blessings on your week ahead and the exegesis of your hearts. Blessed be and amen.
Seeing our sanctuary today was a lovely reminder of our beloved and cherished space. It's also a signal of what we're capable of, that is, continuing to create a sanctuary beyond our grounds and in our relationships with ourselves and each other. One of the ways we have always practiced our connection to the wider world is through our financial affirmation. 50% of the plate beyond pledges goes toward supporting UUCWC's vision to help change the world by supporting like-minded organizations in their efforts. One of our newest financial recipients is Ivan's House. Located in Morrisville, this organization provides food and social support for immigrants, people unable to leave their homes, and other vulnerable populations. To make a donation, you may use the church website, donate through PayPal, set up e-banking, or send a check through the mail directly to the church. For more information, please visit the UUCWC website. The link is in the chat. Remember to kindly assist our treasurer by noting on your check or the memo line of your PayPal donation that your gift is for the weekly plate. Your generosity and affirmation is greatly appreciated.
Our parting words this morning come from my colleague, the Reverend Barbara Hogadden, who has written, "People have to dream a church into being. They must have a vision for what could be and allow themselves to want that vision. We are grateful for those dreamers. People have to labor for a dream to become a church. They have to meet and plan and find agreement. They have to make calls and write letters, teach Sunday school, warm up food, work in the yard, and raise the money for their dream. We are grateful for those laborers. People must love a church into being. When they get weary, when things seem scarce, when they can't agree, they must love hard enough to see it through, to see in one another the hope and the salvation of the world. We leave today grateful for all who have loved this church into what and who we are today and who we are becoming. We, those people, by our presence in all of these different ways today. Friends, I am wishing you health and I am sending you love. This is the day we are given. Let us rejoice and be glad in it." Our closing hymn is by Thrive Choir. I invite you to listen and to move and to sing along as you learn the words. Carol will be placing them in the chat.
We shall be known by the company we keep, by the ones who circle around to tend these fires.
We shall be known by the ones who sow and reap the seeds of change of life from deep within the earth. It is time now. It is time now that we thrive. It is time we lead ourselves into the well. It is time now, and what a time to be alive. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. We shall be known by the company we keep, by the ones who circle round to tend these fires. We shall be known by the ones who sow and reap the seeds of change alive from deep within the earth. It is time now. It is time now that we thrive. It is time we lead ourselves into the well. It is time now, and what a time to be alive. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. We shall be known by the company we keep, by the ones who circle round to tend these fires. We shall be known by the ones who sow and reap the seeds of change alive from deep within the earth. It is time now. It is time now that we thrive. It is time we lead ourselves into the well. It is time now, and what a time to be alive. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love.
You have a chalice lit at home. Let's lift them together and say the words found in the chat. We extinguish this chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These remain kindled until we meet again.